Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
I'm going to bring you some Richard Dunn because he spoke to us a little earlier on and was really good, as you'll hear. So I started off by talking to Richard about the performance and trying to get a sense of where he was on the spectrum. I mean, there are some people saying this is all-time low, worst result in Irish history. And then lots of other people are making the point that Luxembourg genuinely are much improved. I mean, the Champions League player on the pitch was theirs. He scored the goals. So, you know, maybe it's just the new reality. So where was he?
I don't want to give too much credit to Luxembourg. I think if we look at ourselves, we look at it and say, well, getting beat by Luxembourg, there isn't an up way of thinking about it. I think that they've improved or whatever. The fact that we're coming down to their standards and we're not capable of winning a game at home against Luxembourg, I think goes to show that it's closer to the worst result ever, I suppose, than being a story of how things are at the moment, and Luxembourg have improved.
Mm. And it wasn't like Ireland battered them for 90 minutes and had loads of chances and then Luxembourg just came up with one moment. I mean, even Stephen Kenny said it was an even enough game.
Yeah, it wasn't. If you watch the match without the emotional connection to the Irish team, you watch it and you go, well, this could go either way. You looked at probably who had a little bit more quality and you would have thought Luxembourg had the players who could threaten a bit better. And in the end, they got the win. They deserved to win. And I think that's the worst thing about the whole thing is the fact that it wasn't a fluke. It wasn't like they just broke and got a lucky goal. They were in the game the whole time. We never got to a stage where we dominated them and looked like it's coming and we're pressing and stuff like that. So when you go and play a match and you lose and you don't perform to anywhere near where you should be, it's hugely disappointing.
Mm. Ireland were very sloppy as well in possession. I mean, that was almost hard to get over throughout the game. Just so many, I wouldn't even call them moves because they probably weren't developed enough to be moves, but so many passages of possession just broke down with moments where you're thinking, oh, we surely have to be better than that. You know, these players are doing better than that at times. Why do you think that crept into the performance, that sloppiness, I wonder?
It's very difficult. I think when the way we've played and the whole sort of mantra has been we're going to change the style of football, we're going to reinvent what we do, and we're going to be a passing team and all that stuff. A lot of our passes are defensive passes across the back through the side of midfield or whatever like that. And it just gets boring for the players. They're just doing the same thing over and over and over again. And I suppose lapses of concentration because they're looking at it thinking, what options have I got? My option is either backwards or sideways. And for the Irish team to progress, we need to start playing football, but in the opposition's half. We can't pretend that we're now a footballing team because the goalkeeper rolls the ball out to the centre-backs and they play it amongst themselves. We need to be playing more attacking football. We need to be playing higher up the field. And I just think over a period of time when the players get to a situation where, okay, you want us to pass, but where do we pass to? Where's the movement? Where's our other options? I think then it starts, they're probably looking for a forward pass that's not on and they're coming back. And it just, because there's no rhythm or routine to what we're doing, it just, I don't know, it just, sometimes that sloppiness can seep in as well. And it's just, it's not so much the player on that occasion, it's just an effect of how everything is being done at the time.
We had David Myler and Kevin Kilbane on the show yesterday and they were making a point very similar to what you're talking about. They were saying the likes of Jason Knight and Josh Cullen, a lot of their passing was very deep and in front of Luxembourg's. So, you know, David Myler was saying as a midfielder, he felt if the midfielders he was up against were passing in front of him and going sideways or backwards, that's his job done. It's when they're playing in behind him that there's trouble. And he said, you know, Luxembourg would have been perfectly happy to watch Ireland pass it around the way they did, because it was never really hurting them too often or stressing them all that often.
No, and it's the hardest thing. It's like when I used to play, or you look at it and you go, as long as the ball's in front of me, it doesn't matter. I can shift 10 yards left and right and it's easy. And this is the problem when you're playing for Ireland. There's a lot of nice, simple passes which don't threaten the opposition. And international teams, the first thing that they'll do every time when they meet up, they'll work on a defensive shape and they'll say, right, as long as we keep these two banks, a four and a five or wherever it may be, we'll make ourselves difficult to break down. And Ireland haven't got that player who can break them down. So they know Ireland are almost reluctant sometimes just to do what they're good at in terms of run down the wing and stick a lot of crosses in the box and cause trouble. They want to be intricate and they want to be creative, but we don't have the player to do it. So for the opposition, when they see it and they say, right, well, Ireland have the ball at the back, by the time they come to midfield, it's going to be 10 or 15 seconds. So we'll relax, we'll get our shape and we'll just wait and they'll give us the ball eventually. And that's the way it's been. And on the opposite, when oppositions come at us, we seem spread out. We seem like there's gaps in between our midfield, in between the centre halves, everywhere. So we're actually, instead of the progression that we were hoping for over the last year or whatever, to make ourselves a better side, a better international team, we've gone backwards because we're now a lot easier to play against. And we're not as, in terms of results and stuff, that we're not as competitive as we used to be. We might have more possession of the ball, but possession for possession's sake is pointless. And we've had 60-70% possession in a lot of games or whatever, and we've not won one. So we need to find an effective way of getting the best out of the players that we have in the squad at the moment.
Mm. And are those players that we have capable of playing more painful balls for the opposition, passing forward, that kind of stuff? I mean, do you see players there who can do that and they're getting there and you're hopeful that this is just part of a journey towards getting there, or would you be slightly concerned they don't have it in them?
I would look at the individual players on the pitch and see what they do for their clubs and all that stuff, and you realise straight away we don't have that creative player, we don't have that number 10 who can open teams up and can take players on and cause distress in the opposition defence. So therefore we have to look again and say, well, what can they do and what are they good at and what's their strengths as a team? And I know everyone says, oh, we need to do all this play football and all that stuff, but you need to do it, but you need to do it with intensity, and we need to play at a higher level of intensity than what we've been doing. We've got centre forwards in terms of Connolly and Robinson who are quick guys, not the cleverest in terms of the runs that they make and stuff like that, and we're doing slow build-ups. They want the ball in behind, they want to chase, they want to put pressure on, and then the rest of the team can get up, and if we win the ball, brilliant, then we start passing around in their half, and then we look dangerous, because as soon as you're a defender and you're on the back foot and you're defending on the edge of your 18-yard line, mistakes happen and mistakes come because there's so many decisions to be made in a short period. But if the build-up is slow and delayed and coming from deeper, you've got time to adjust, make all yourself set, and I just think that's where we are at the moment.
Yeah, it's very interesting, because even if you think of our chances, you think of the James Collins chance in the first half, or you think the goal in Belgrade is really good football, but it was quite direct in a way. Like Doherty made the break, I think, wasn't it, in Belgrade, and then, you know, breaks down and Alan Brown quickly fizzes it out wide to Stevens and off to Robinson, and he takes on his man and sticks in a cross. And, you know, that's not just pass for pass sake. That's really good football, but there's a tempo to it.
Yeah, and there's a purpose to it as well at the end of it. I mean, I don't know what the stats are, but if you look at the goals throughout the history of everything, it's always run three or four passes. You always win the ball back high up, play it out to the wide guy, he crosses it, or play it through the middle and we score. It's not goals with 25, 30 passes are very few and far between. I think if we have a side which is good enough to keep possession when we're 1-0, 2-0 up in games, that's when it works, that's when it's great. But you need to get up in games, and we're stuck in the middle sort of trying to completely eradicate what Irish football has been about for the last 50 years and don't worry about how much fight and heart we have as a team, because we're now super footballers. There needs to be a balance in between it, and I don't think we've found that at the moment.
Because it was quite notable a few times in the first half, especially on the left-hand side, whatever way it transpired. I don't know, were Luxembourg trying to send us towards our left-hand side, or do we just go down that route for whatever reason? But there were a couple of times when we did play it out, centre half split in the box, and just couldn't beat the Luxembourg press. Didn't have whatever it took to get out.
Yeah, it's hard. You need options, and you need. I just think it's slow and it's very, very predictable what we're doing. And it seems to be like it's, all right, I've read a book and this is how it goes. So left centre half gets it, he plays it into the number six and he knocks it out to the fullback. It's almost basic sort of passing drills. Well, teams understand that. Everyone knows that you need a little bit of something different. You need to be spontaneous at times. You need to have movement off the ball, whereas we don't have any runners in behind.
Sorry to interrupt. It was so noticeable when Robbie Brady made a big run in behind off the second half whistle when he came on. And it was like one of the first times that had happened, and it gave them something to think about. I think Gary Breen made that point with us yesterday. You know, you need 10, 15 more moments like that in a game to mix it up, maybe.
Yeah. You just, when you're playing against that and everyone's in front of you, it's easy. It's very, very easy. As soon as someone turns and runs in behind you, my job as a centre midfielder, I'll have to go turn around, look at the centre half and say, you get him. As I turn around, there's another guy on me, and everything just becomes a little bit more hectic and stressed. And you start to, right now I've got a job on my hands, I've got to think as well as move. But we don't threaten teams, we don't do anything like that. It's all very, very basic. I don't know. It's like anyone can go to the park and say, right lads, you've passed the ball there amongst yourselves. All right, now we're a passing team. There needs to be more to it. There needs to be a purpose, and there needs to be a threat.
Yeah. It's a strange one, isn't it? Because
it's frustrating. It's so frustrating. Yeah.
When Trapattoni was manager, I was one of those fans who had a real sense there was more in this team, you know, and he kept all you boys in a tight enough leash. And I was just having a look back. It's amazing where Irish football is, even in comparison with 10 years ago, you know. Like, so some of that squad that went to the Euros, and obviously the Euros didn't go to plan, but you were against very good teams as well. So you're in there, Robbie Keane's in there, Damien Duff, Glenn Whelan, who... Very underrated as a footballer and did his stuff in the Premier League for a long time. Keith Andrews was player of that tournament, Premier League experience, really good footballer. You'd Kevin Doyle, you'd Shane Long, you'd Shea Given in goal, you'd Darren Gibson, who was doing okay at Everton at the time. He was on the bench. James McLean, breakout season, you know, flying at 23. Aidan McGeady, brilliant technical footballer. I think he started 11 of the 12 qualifiers for the Euros. You'd John O'Shea with 5 Premier League medals and a Champions League medal in his back pocket. You'd Johnny Walters, you'd Stephen Hunt. Wes Hoole and Seamus Coleman couldn't even get in the squad. So I look now and I think, geez, what Stephen Kenny's trying to do with those boys, you know, you could have seen something very, very different. And that's almost the frustration in some ways, that he's trying to now knit something together with a lot of young players who were putting a lot of, you know, pressure on and really high hopes for this generation. And it's a lot to ask, you know. So it's tough. How do you make sense of that? There's no one to blame really there. It's unfortunate.
I think you have to, first and foremost, if you come in and you look at it, you go, right, well, look at the players first, and then you adjust and say, well, this is what we can do and what we can't do. And I think with the players, it's up to the players as well. They have to take the responsibility. And I know they don't play for the clubs and they don't have the stature probably of the players that you've mentioned from back then. But if they perform at the international stage, then they will get there, they'll improve and they'll get big moves and they'll go forward. I just don't believe what they're being asked to do is effective enough in international football. There's a style of play which is great and it's an idea which is fantastic and stuff like that, but there needs to be more to it. There needs to be substance, there needs to be pressure on the ball, there needs to be movement off the ball, there needs to be everything apart, get away from the passing and all that stuff. The rest of it doesn't work. Nobody moves, nobody does that, and nobody threatens the other opposition. So we need to find all that and become a side which is difficult to beat, to a team which can cause problems. And then when we get that, we have that respect where teams are going, right, these are going to put us under pressure, let's back off a little bit. Then you have the opportunity to play.
Yes.
But teams are quite happy to let us have the ball at the moment because we haven't got that team that where we can hold them.
You're almost saying we have a back to front a little bit, that we're passing as if we're 5-0 up.
It seems that way. It seems like there's no urgency in what we're doing. It's. I think we had 4 shots or something on target against Luxembourg over 90 minutes. We should have had 4 shots in the first 15 minutes or just to put them under pressure, just to cause them a little bit of nerves. But we're so nice and easy to play against that let's team settle in.
And is that at the door of Stephen Kenny ultimately, or about the players as well out there?
I think your instructions obviously come from the management. So you're being asked to do something, and the players will always try and follow it to the letter. But I think as the game progresses and you get into 60, 70 minutes of games, you have to start to think, right, it's not working tonight, whatever it is, it's not working. Let's try and do something different. And I think footballers will generally get the gist and the feel of how the game's going and what's needed. And it just didn't seem like that was there. Whether that's, we don't have the freedom to go and express ourselves or to go and take the game by its horns or whatever it is, just seemed to be an acceptance of, well, we have to keep doing this. This is where we're going. And regardless of if it's working or not, we're just going to follow it.
I do get the impression they are given freedom, you know, and I'm sure they're told, go out and express yourselves and play football and play what you see a little bit. And, you know, you see Seamus Coleman at times, he feels he's licensed. He had tried to hit a few, you know, big switches. It wasn't like he was sticking religiously to some, you know, manual way of playing football. So I don't know. Like we became more disjointed as it came, you know, went on, and you've Alan Brown at right wing back. And like, you wouldn't say that was a horrific last 10, 15 minutes for Luxembourg, and they were hanging on and we were throwing everything at them. Like, we kind of went into decline really as it went on.
Yeah, just a lack of belief. And I suppose, if you've tried something for 75 minutes, you need to change it eventually, but we never changed it really. We just stuck guys in positions what they're not used to and stuff. And it's very difficult to analyse the Luxembourg match without just looking at everything that's gone previously. It's not been good enough really.
Okay.
Since the manager's taken over, it hasn't improved. It's like, we're now playing, people complained because we were boring and we weren't good to watch, but you can't tell me that it's any better now. You know, there's nothing to it. Previously, we were competitive, and whether we qualified or we didn't, we always looked like we had a chance, and we'd always be in a fight coming up to the last game. Well, now we're not, and it's no more entertaining. There's no injections of pace or amazing creativity or movement which we've not seen before. It's all very, very basic stuff, minus the team being competitive.
You said an interesting thing as well. It's not us without the ball. There are big gaps, so we're not that difficult to play against when we have the ball. But based on what you're saying, we're not too tricky to play against without the ball either. What are you seeing from us in that respect? Because there were a couple of games where you could tell the team were really trying to press the opposition and press them high up. Last year in the various games, that seemed not to be so much the case at times over the last couple of matches.
Yeah, it just seems like in the recent games, it seems like the intensity's gone out of the
game.
And I know the manager spoke about maybe the players aren't fit enough, or they're not capable of playing the two games after such a hectic season. So I get that a little bit, but there still should be that 60 minutes of high intensity, and he might drop off towards the end. But even I feel when we attack, we go forward slowly, and we move very slowly going forward as a unit. So defence and midfield just slowly separate. Midfield and attack don't seem to really get in contact with each other. So then when we lose the ball, which inevitably we do because we're just going around in circles at times, those gaps are very wide, very long. And other teams and clever teams with decent players can find them easily. And like you're saying, Mitrovic, to give them half a chance, and he's 25 yards out, he chips the keeper. But that sort of, the space was there, the creativity was there, and they take advantage of it.
So you weren't all that impressed with the Serbia game then, really?
I thought they done all right in the Serbia game, and it was a much better performance than what Saturday was. But I find it hard to believe that it was brilliant. Our brilliance can't be that. We can't set our standards that a brilliant performance results in a 3-2 defeat away in Serbia. We should be playing brilliantly because we've beaten Serbia, or we've done all right, but we got beat. Basically, so I find it hard to buy into the idea that it was an outstanding or a brilliant performance.
Yeah, it's hard though. I mean, how many of these players will be in the Premier League in 2-3 years time?
it's hard. Do you know what makes a huge difference for players like that and players like Knight and stuff and Malumbi? If they're playing international football at a high level and they're competing, clubs will then start to look at them. But if they're part of an Irish side, which nobody gets the opportunity to be great, I suppose, to express themselves. Again, Serbia, everyone played well. No, you couldn't pinpoint anyone and say they were awful. Mm. But it's not enough. You need people to be playing in a team that wins. And then people go, well, that Irish team's good because they win games. And then they'll look and say, well, why are they good? And it's because of this, this, and this. But we don't have any of that. They don't have any experience of winning games. They don't have any joy for playing for Ireland, because every time they play, they lose. Mm. So it's just hard. And if they can get that confidence to start winning games, then their performances at club level will rise, and hopefully they will get into the Premier League.
Well, that's the hope. I was looking back, I was reading a Michael O'Neill interview from a while back, you know, on how he transformed Northern Ireland type thing, you know. And he took over when they were 86th in the world, and across his first 17 games with no wins, they dropped to 129th in the world. And they drew at home to Luxembourg. They drew at home to Azerbaijan. You know, there's kind of parallels with us. And they finished fifth in a group of six. So it was really bad. And he was saying, you know, so they were, and then obviously things really turned and they went in a great run and they got up to 25th in the world, which is kind of hard to believe. You forget they were up to 25th in the world. And O'Neill talked about what you're talking about there. He said there was just an anxiety in the play. Like when the pressure was on, in that period, there was just an anxiety. And it's really hard to express yourself when you're feeling anxious. And look, we probably saw a bit of that, to be fair, on Saturday, or certainly I'm trying to tell myself that's part of it, you know, that these players were operating under a bit of pressure and, you know, Collins misses the first early chance and you start to think, is it one of those nights? And you know, that becomes a part. You've been involved in those nights, I'm sure. Yeah. That becomes a part of everyone's performance. And it's hard to play brilliant, high-tempo, passing football when that's going on. So maybe there's a hope that the team have to go through a few nights like this and then, you know, momentum comes and suddenly what they're trying to do gets a whole lot quicker and a whole lot better. And we're looking back on this as just growing pains. So are you hopeful of that?
Very hopeful, yeah. I really hope that's the case. That would be amazing. But in the short term, there's not much to enjoy. Sure. I think if I look at this, if I look at the manager and his behaviour and his demeanour over the last while, he doesn't look like he's confident. He doesn't look like he's got as much belief as he did when he started. And that'll obviously fold out into the players. And whether that guy's the... I don't know whether over the next 15 or 20 games, if the same man's in charge, does he have the authority and the leadership to make these players to start to believe? Because on the previous 10 games, there isn't really any evidence that they believe in what they're doing. It's almost like they're doing it because that's the way they need to play, and they're falling into this trap of believing that we need to be a footballing team and falling away from the belief that we need to be a competitive team. We need to be a team that wins games or doesn't lose games. And That's where my struggle is, because I want Stephen Kenny to do well. I want him to be successful. But I just don't see any evidence in what I've seen in the 10 games leads me to believe that give him a little bit of time, because there's chinks of improvement. You can see little glimmers of hope and stuff. I don't see them at the moment.
You don't.
So that's where I'm concerned about going forward, how it's going to get much better without a change in mentality or a change in style or belief or whatever.
Okay. Well, I guess only time will tell, won't it? I mean, we'll see. Yeah. Maybe.
I hope I'm wrong.
Yeah, I think we all do. I hope, you know, maybe Luxembourg go and take points off Azerbaijan and nick a draw with Serbia, and, you know, suddenly Saturday doesn't feel as bad and we improve. Yeah. A lot of injuries as well. That's the other hope. I mean, he's down a lot of players he would have picked and a lot of players he did pick against Slovakia. So it's not an excuse, and he was at pains not to make excuses, but it's definitely a mitigating factor when you list out the injuries, you know? I mean, James Collins working incredibly hard and, you know, but really Ireland are going to need more to score goals, and you lose Harahan and you lose some of the players they've lost. It hasn't been easy either. I mean, there's been very little luck about this 10 games thus far.
No, there hasn't. And he's been robbed of one of the main things, which is having fans in the stadium. Fans can drive that Irish team forward like no other fans. And that's one of the things that will be a shame if he doesn't get the opportunity to have that on his side. Mm. But then also, you look at how often he's had the chance to play his best 11. I don't know. But not too often either. Mm. But that's football. That's international football. That can happen.
Sure.
Regardless of the situation in the world, that can happen. So we can't look at that and see. For me, one of the things and is if you've gone through a bad spell, I remember when I was at Man City, Ken Keegan used to speak to us and he would say, when we're having a bad spell, we've always been told, go and look at who's the highest earning players on the pitch or the highest earning players at the club and put them out on the pitch, because at one stage you thought they were the best players that you were going to sign, and now they're all out in the field, go and prove your earnings or whatever it is. And it's the same almost for international football. When you're struggling and you've got all these players with experience sitting on the bench, you're losing out. You need to get players who have won games for Ireland on the pitch and playing more. And I know Jeff Hendrick and Robbie and Shane Duffy, they probably haven't had the best of seasons, but they have that experience and that mentality of how to go and win games. And that can only benefit the younger players coming through as well. And I think missing them, not playing them, takes a little bit away from the learning experience, the development of the younger players coming through as well.
Okay. Listen, always great getting your thoughts and having you on, Richard. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Nice one. Cheers, Joe. Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Now you're very welcome along to this evening's football show. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent. Good evening.
Evening, Joe.
Got to be honest, Dan. I'm not sure I can face this conversation again. Yesterday was Kevin Coban and David Myler to kick off the show. We then had another hour with Gary Breen and David Snaid, in the midst of which there was Bernard Jackman and Kieran Cunningham reviewing the Sunday papers. Guess what we talked about there? And 7:30 this evening was Richard Dunne. So I'm not sure I can take it anymore. I had to watch the match. That was bad enough.
Yeah, it's like they've actually closed. Like they've made these international windows more condensed. I don't know if you've noticed this. Like the travel, like there's actually one fewer day like between games, and yet it doesn't feel like it. You know what I mean? Like it doesn't feel like it's a bit more of a sprint, you know? And yeah, it's pretty deflating, you know. It's there's no other way of describing it really. Like I'm very used to this familiar feeling of Irish football crisis, you know, being here before. We've had these chats before, you know, and I've always said this, you know, like you have a bad result for an Irish team, and it's for all that we can talk about Irish football at sporadic intervals, you know, all year long at different points, at different times, we can talk about this or that or whatever. You know, it's only ever like a national team malfunction that like prompts this type of debate, you know, this type of analysis and debate. And I've listened to a lot of things that you've been putting out and you know, listened to a whole lot of other stuff as well, in addition to just being around it and listening to press conferences and everything. And yeah, it's pretty bad, definitely. This one is up there on the scale. When you hear anything being compared to, I think like the lads were this morning, for anything being compared to Cyprus in 2006, and you're in that general discussion that you're being mentioned in the context and framed in the discussion around those games, you're in a bad place.
Yeah. And it's a well-worn routine now, the fallout from these games, initial reaction and the analysis of just how terrible it was. And I think, I'm not sure which stage of grief we're at now in terms of the Irish fallout, but I think we're somewhere just past the, well, look, it's down to years of neglect conversation and let's have the bigger conversation about lack of development in Irish football. And even that's a bit half-hearted because we've just had it so often. So I don't know. It's the same old stuff.
There's layers to it. It's just a fact of life that sometimes it takes this result to have that debate. You know, like I remember after
we have that after every game.
Well, I know, but in particular, like I remember after the 5-1 playoff defeat against Denmark. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I remember that weekend doing a piece, but actually talking about the board and the FAI and all that type of thing that hasn't changed. And it would have been very hard to say pitch that piece a month previously, say, you know, that it's you know, like you sort of see Brian Kerr on the TV talking about stuff. You see, you know, rude doctor's work being discussed, you know, in the last couple of days, which really is something that is a talking point at all times amongst people you would speak to in football, you know, on a consistent basis. But it does take these things to bring it to another level. And listen, so there's almost like, you know, what is it, macro and micro debates or whatever way you want to look at it. I'm no economist, but like there's obviously, you know, there's a broader debate here and about where we go. And then there's obviously a smaller debate, but it's often the one that energizes people a lot more. which in Irish football always centres around the manager. That's what happens.
I disagree with your touch, actually, to be fair. I think we talk fairly routinely. I don't mean we and off the ball. I mean the Irish sports media and you as well in particular. I think we talk a lot about development in Irish football and what we haven't done and what we need to do and where we need to go. I think you and I discuss it quite a bit. It comes up quite a bit,
to be fair.
I think it's a constant complaint. It's a constant, you know, I think it's fairly much to the fore of all our conversations about Irish football. I think as we've looked at this, even steeper decline over the last 10 years in terms of the players Trapattoni had available when Richard Dunne was playing, who was on earlier, and we went through the squad, and goodness me, there's no comparison with now. I feel, you know, maybe one of the reasons it hasn't exploded in a big way after this game is because we're sick of having that chat, actually. I think it's all we've talked about.
Maybe I'm more so thinking in the current affairs, like entertainment genre of discussion where it comes out. You know, you will have had that today at various times.
Sure.
And maybe that's more so what I'm thinking of relative to...
Yeah.
You know, this sphere as such, you know, but I take the point that you're saying, and like just, and to some respects, and I've been making this point in the last week, you know, and stuff I've been writing, like, I don't know what you feel about this, because, you know, there's a lot going on in people's lives at the moment, you know, and people are sort of, you know, people are pretty beaten down by everything, you know, like people are now waiting on the latest round of lockdown updates tomorrow evening when Ireland are playing Qatar, you know. Are people going to be getting angry about Ireland Qatar tomorrow, or are they wrapped up in this? And I sort of wonder the extent to which, like, are people even really engaging with this crisis in the way that they would with previous ones? Like, are we almost beaten down by past disappointments?
Yes.
Like, in my world, of course, everyone's talking about it, but I sort of wonder, like, are a lot of people just more,
they
aren't any good.
Look, for all the, and look, because of the nature of my job, we had to do a 6-hour show yesterday, so of course we're going to do a lot on it, and we have to do a 3-hour show tonight, so of course we're going to talk about it. I mean, we can put a bow on this pretty neatly, and it's the same conversation in every WhatsApp group that follows sport, and it's like people aren't that exercised about it. The brutal truth is people watched the game and said, that was pretty terrible. The players aren't good enough. The manager's trying to play a brand of football we can't play. Luxembourg had some decent players, so it's not like they were complete no-hopers. Like, it wasn't the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. And it's pretty much in keeping with where we've been under Stephen Kenny. It's not a million miles away from where we've been over the last couple of years. Now, send a funny gif of a cat doing something silly and let's move on. That's where people are, I think.
Look what someone's going on a rant on Twitter again or something. Tend to how it goes.
I think,
but
it was digested.
Going to the games.
It was digested. It was digested pretty quickly. It was like...
But people aren't going. I really think that's something that's... like that is part of the debate. Like, we're missing a lot of the usual sights and sounds of these things, you know. We're missing the boos or not in the stadium at full time. We're missing the empty seats that represent loss of interest or decline or not. We don't really know. Mm. Like, as I made this point the other day, it feels like the entire Kenny era has taken place on the internet, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I'm in a position of being able to go to the home games at least. It's so surreal. Like, and this, by the way, this isn't a mitigation, right? This isn't a defense of anyone, because in fairness, I heard Kev Caban make the point. And it's a very good point that if someone wants to go down too far down the road of, well, we're missing the fans, you know, Ireland are missing the fans. The counterpoint is there's a lot of young players there who don't have the pressure of the stadium. So in theory, it should be easier to express themselves. So you can take that argument, right, wherever you want to take it. But I do think there's something weird and strange about the fact that, like, you know, people, obviously there are people out there who are calling for Stephen Kenny to go, thinking that that won't happen, right? But if it did happen, to imagine that, like, his entire, like, that he would have managed Ireland without ever having managed the team in front of a crowd at the Aviva Stadium. It's sort of unbelievable, you know. It's like you have a vision probably of what the job would be and what would entail, and the noise and the attention, and probably that opening night, and, like, you know, like, it's all played itself out virtually, like, in a weird sense. And I'm sitting there in the stadium on Saturday, and I've watched the game back afterwards, and which is a punishment, but even watching it on TV, right, there's something a bit different about it on TV, that you, like, you have still the production values, and you have the familiar angle of, like, where you see things on the pitch on a TV game, and, you know, the mics might be turned up a bit in the sideline, and and we're so used to watching closed doors games like this, you know, in the Premier League or whatever. The players are probably used to it. But I was there like at one point with 10, 15 minutes to go on Saturday, and the game is just drifting away. And it is drifting away. It's visibly drifting away. And, you know, you hear the shouts from players and stuff. It's like walking by an Astro Park or something, hearing people shouting. You're thinking, this is a game that's about to trigger like a massive... You don't realise the storm this result is about to unleash. And yet there's no real heightened sense inside the stadium of it at all, bar people raising their voices a small bit more. You know, it's like a real... It's a sort of a virtual reality experience. Mm. And I said that like you can spin that both ways, but it sort of feels like you'd like, you know, you would like at least to see what it would be like with a crowd there and some of those usual barometers that we use to measure these things. It's just a really just weird, you know, like they are weird games. Like, even the build up to the Ireland goal, which you watch back, you know, the Luxembourg goal, sorry. Like there was, you know, there was actually twice where they went reasonably long to Shane Long. And the first time he handballed it, second time he sort of miscontrolled it and he fouled the player. You know, the Irish players, like it's 5 minutes to go. Players are just sort of walking back, you know, trudging back, preparing for Luxembourg to launch it. And you're thinking, God, if there's a stadium here now, people would be narky and getting at it and just, you know, really wound up and stuff. And they're almost sleepwalking into it, you know. And to be honest, that was evident from the early minutes on Saturday too. Like there was just no tempo or nothing really. You're thinking, oh no, like, you know, there was a sense of like foreboding there really early in the stadium. Don't know if that was the case on TV, but certainly something in the stadium we're thinking, this is way too flat, way, way too flat. And it never got out of that gear at all.
No, it sure didn't. That's an interesting phrase you used, his entire tenure almost taking place on the internet. And it's very appropriate then that I can't remember an Irish manager that has represented a culture war like this before. And it's, you know, played out on the internet. So maybe it's a product of the internet as much as anything. And I think it's a product of how he came into the game, that it was the Mick versus Stephen thing. And Mick represented, you know, old school values and be hard to beat and the professionalism that comes with the English game. And Stephen Kenny represented, you know, a hope that Ireland could be better and, you know, a domestic product that could be better as well. And people pick their sides, and that's another aspect of this whole thing, which is playing out and has been playing out and how it's discussed.
It's very draining, to be honest. You know,
it's very boring.
I find it quite draining. I say this as someone who's been involved in it to some degree, you know, and like, you know, you get the text in, like, you know, the view of like the media sort of protecting Stephen Kenny type thing, and that's become part of the discussion and the camps and that whole discussion. But like it's sort of like, and you know, you sort of have it in your head that this, and if Ireland had got good results like in the last week, like the worst thing that anyone could have been is like triumphalist, you know.
It just can't
go that way, you know. And you see this when the pattern of Irish managers coming in. So what is it now if you change manager? Does everyone then on the other side flip to be supportive of that manager? And people, like, you know what I mean, it's not constructive sometimes. Like, I don't think some of the discussions around it are constructive. Like, I thought Gary Breen was actually quite good yesterday talking about how, in fairness, it's not as if Stephen Kenny is the only manager looking to play, like, that can play that style of football. But also as a consequence of that if these things aren't working for Kenny, like, I sometimes wonder, are people like watching all of the games, or if they have a predetermined conclusion about if it doesn't work, then this is why it didn't work. You know what I mean? So it didn't work well for the team on Saturday. So automatically Ireland now need to play a slightly more direct style as a consequence, other than maybe they just didn't do a very good job of what they were trying to do on Saturday. Like, as was pointed out, Luxembourg were trying to play the ball out from the back and, you know, do some of the things, you know, play in a sort of a modern way, you know, that like, you know, play in a modern way that is tailored to suit the players that they have. And I think that it's like, there's a very simplistic read sometimes on the discussion around where Ireland are, that the discussion is, well, don't have very good players, so we need to go back to what we used to do, you know, well, you know, at a particular point in time. Whereas actually I would sort of take a slightly different view on that and say, well, you have to play the system that best suits the players that you have. And we have to be conscious that, like, you look at the profile of the what appear to be the best Irish players in the generation coming through. You're looking at, you know, Jason Knight, Malumbi, J- Josh Cullen, Aaron Connolly, and attacking areas. You're not talking about any big lads there. You know, you're talking about smaller players, slightly more tactical players in some of those instances that I mentioned. Now, I know there's Adam Ida. We'll see what Ida, but Troy Parrott, again, someone who's quite a tactical player. Although he's physically, I think he's got stronger. But I guess what I'm saying is that it's not as if, like, we necessarily have the players, I've been making this point, to like defend the 18-yard box like we might have if you've got Richard Dunne or John O'Shea or informed Shane Duffy in your back four, you know? So I think that, like, the principle of probably what Stephen Kenny is trying to do, I think, is correct, to a point. But obviously, the question is, can he necessarily either convey that message or implement it in a way that's successful and effective? And that's, to me, where the debate is. And this culture war, we can only play this way, we're going to play that way. I think it's more of, well, I think he's probably on the right track in terms of what Ireland need to do, but they need to do it better, you know, like to do it better and maybe just get that message across in a better way. Or why isn't the penny dropping? But I don't know. I don't know. Is there a switch that we flick and we revert back to something that worked before? I don't know. I don't think there's that magic code there, to be honest, you know. Yeah. But that doesn't excuse very valid discussion about Stephen Kenny's tenure, because if you lose at home to Luxembourg, and I've said this a long, you put yourself in the shop window for abuse, you know, and that's fair game. That's part of the job. I don't think you can defend Saturday. I think it raises very valid questions, and you know, that's fair enough. But sometimes I suggest, well, we have to go back to doing something. Like, it's not as simple as that.
Mm. So what was the biggest issue with the performance then on Saturday?
Stephen Kenny actually said on Friday that the team needed to play with speed, you know, to play with a bit of tempo. And that wasn't really the case at all. I'm not going to come out here and talk like a tactical expert, you know, like there's ex-pros who can do that in a much more, knowledgeable way. But to me, I sort of wonder that he'd almost become a bit of a slave to the system on Saturday, in the sense that there was a change to the 3-5-2 during the week, which I think made sense for a variety of reasons. You know, the wing backs, we talk about Doherty and Stevens on endless occasions, but also even to get Connolly into a front two. And I think, you know, the fact that Serbia play something similar, so there's an element of like matching up to what they do, but then being able to expose them in a particular way when they broke. Yet, when it came to the game on Saturday, you're just there in the second half looking at it going, well, okay, so they're now playing three at the back, but Doherty and Stevens have gone off, so it's now McLean and Alan Brown as the wing backs, which definitely wasn't the vision when, you know, speaking about like a system that suits your better players. With Connolly out of it, you didn't have that pace then through the middle at all. So, you know, Robinson likes to come short. Collins, like, is not quick. You know, Collins, you need him like sort of 15, 20 yards closer to goal than what he was, you know, most of the time. And you're thinking, this isn't really working here. And I would have spoke to some people, you know, again, football heads, like between the two games, who were pretty confident that they were probably switched to a back four to avoid a situation where you end up in the Luxembourg game having a lot of the ball, but just in the wrong areas, you know, because you've an extra player defensively that you maybe don't need. As much as Luxembourg weren't a park the bus team and they weren't going to be, but they just had a real, they moved in tandem together as a unit, whereas Ireland, like, you know, just a lot of space that wasn't being inhabited. It just didn't have the pace, or just there was nothing, you know. And even when Robbie Brady came on then, it was a different type of... See, Alan, we talk about Alan Brown as, say, a number 10, who sort of leads the press in a way too, you know, in that respect, you know, and he sort of drives teams on. So you bring Brady on, but he was just trying to get involved in the ball, drifting wide, putting in crosses. But there was something about the balance that just was completely off, you know. And listen, maybe just being a systems thing is too simplistic as well too. There just was a lack of general energy and innovation and pace about how things were operating. Like, it was pretty uninspired. I think that's the fear, yeah. You know, it was lifeless, you know. And again, like, like even good Stephen Kenny teams, you know, in his past, albeit at different levels, but even in Europe, you know, when he was playing against good teams, like they weren't that sort of slow, methodical type of team that I think they're being caricatured as now, you know, even the description, like, you know, they're doing things like an academy coach might and stuff like that. You know, they actually were sort of pretty in your face at times and high tempo. And it's just, but like, I must say that some of the games at home, like the Bulgaria game in November, it's quite similar. It's just thinking, God, this is just all very safe. And
well, even on the point you're making, I mean, we had Richard Dunn on earlier and he was just talking about a lack of variety, you know, and lack of pace or just mixing it up, that it's all a bit too predictable. It's all in front of teams and they'll recognize the patterns we're trying to play too. And, you know, it was noticeable Robbie Brady came on straight away. Gary Breen made this point yesterday and he makes a run in behind. And, you know, I've no problem with Ireland trying to beat the Luxembourg press on 23 minutes, not being able to do it, trying again on 25 minutes, still not being able to do it, and going again. Like, you do have to stick to trying to play football because it's where the game's gone. But at the moment, we're just, it feels like sticking rigidly to that probably and almost, you know, not paint by numbers, but probably something in that vicinity, as opposed to really trying to hurt teams. That's the sense I'm getting from
you. Sort of wonder, yeah. It's funny. It's one of these ones that sometimes you don't really find out until after the event, necessarily. You know, but like, are players just like sort of slavishly following instructions? Is it their definition of what the instructions are? Yeah. You know what I mean? Like,
and you could say, like, you know, to be fair, you could say diligently as opposed to slavishly, because I'm sure Stephen Kenny, I've no doubt, given he wants the team to express themselves, I've no doubt he's saying to them, if you see something's on, let's try it. I suspect anyway.
Yeah, I should say, yeah. As I said, his teams have never, there's a depiction of what he's wanting, what he's supposed to want from the team, because of things he said, to be fair, you know, in media and stuff.
Yeah.
That has led to a sort of perception of what a Kenny side is, which I don't think it is. Like, as I said, it didn't even look like a Kenny team the other day, you know? But then again, Kenny teams always had wingers with pace, you know, and he's playing a wing-back system that he didn't always play. So, like, you're sort of, you know, you're thinking, like, did everyone just freeze in the moment a bit, including management? Like, I think they were worried about this game for a while. Like, I think they knew that Luxembourg were good, you know, or certainly better than what they thought. You kind of wondered, do you become paralyzed by that sometimes to some degree? You know, that like, is it overthinking it or something in some way? You know, that like, if Ireland bring the best of what they have to the game, then let Luxembourg react to that. Whereas it more so a case of I don't know, Ireland wary of what Luxembourg can do. I don't know. That's what we'll hear in due course, you know. Certainly listen to Stephen Kenny today. I know you're going to play out some Stephen Kenny, but so, you know, I'm not entirely sure will this all be covered in the clip, but certainly the like, he's certainly putting a lot of stock on, say, the front three on Saturday, Brown, Robinson, Collins. That, like, he even made the point that he thinks they really missed Aaron Connolly, not because of, say, like, Aaron Connolly can frustrate the hell out of people, but it's more what Aaron Connolly does. You know, that pace that he provides and the runs that he makes and what that does, and that the runs he made in Serbia probably created space for Alan Brown to run into. And when they didn't have that service on Saturday, then they domino effect couldn't happen. But listen, the obvious point that you throw back at that is, well, if you didn't have that player who provides that game breaking capability within that system, then why did you play that system? So like that. So like, yes, you're unlucky. Aaron Connolly didn't play. It's correct. But obviously, did you react in the best way to Aaron Connolly not being there? And that is where, you know, that's a very valid criticism that you have to accept. Like, I thought, as much as you know, he doesn't necessarily fit, I'm not sure if he ticks every box for Stephen Kenny, but the game probably did need Shane Long's pace, maybe just for that change, you know, to turn. Luxembourg a bit at times, and you can even see when he come on, listen, he made some mistakes and stuff too, but he did probably get behind them and cause them a few problems, and it just wasn't enough. As I said, there wasn't enough variety, you know, and even when they did try later on to go to direct a bit at times, it wasn't necessarily, you know, it was a bit hit and hope at that stage, you know, as opposed to a real coherent plan.
Yeah, look, I don't know what more there is to say about it, really. I mean, time is only going to tell if this generation Kenny has put his faith in will live up to the billion? And that's kind of the question mark at the moment, isn't it? How many of the Knight, Malumbi, Cullen, Aaron Connolly, Troy Parrott generation will be Premier League players in 5 years' time? That's the interesting question.
We don't know. And listen, the discussions taking place this week about the, if you look at the dearth of players in the Irish squad that are probably in that 23 to 28 age bracket, players who are technically in the prime of their career. So like Duffy, Hendrick, Robbie Brady, Matt Doherty are turning 29 this year. And like you have already turned 29. And you then have like, there's a small number of players in their mid-20s, Robinson, Cullen, Alan Brown, and so on. Some of whom have never played in the Premier League or very fleetingly played in the Premier League. And then you have this gap back to this group coming through, and we don't know where they're going to go. And that's part of the issue that we face. I mean, time is one thing. I mean, the one thing I probably should touch on is obviously the FAI EGM press conference that we had yesterday, where we had Roy Barrett speaking yesterday and Jerry McEnany speaking yesterday. Mm. And look, a pretty strong backing, it would have to be said, of very Stephen strong, Kenny. Yeah. A backing that basically suggested that the results tomorrow night won't, it's not as if he's under pressure to sort of get some result. I think that's fair enough. I think Qatar could cause Ireland a lot of problems, by the way, but that's a slightly different subject. But they're almost like a club side who know what they are, and this Irish team doesn't know what they are at the moment. So like that game to me screams difficulty, actually. But there'll be more derision if you don't get a result. But it does appear that the FAI are very much on board still with Stephen Kenny and willing to give it time, very much willing to give it time. And really, on balance, I still think that's the right thing to do. But it's obviously, the debate is more fraught, in the aftermath of Saturday. But unfortunately, we do have loads of time at the moment. Like there's if you were thinking about changing things up anyway, which is maybe a discussion, it's unfair to have it, but if you were to think about having that, if that was in the back of the mind, some kind of another succession plan and in your head of what you might do, it's so long to Ireland actually have a game in the Euros campaign now that what are you going to do? It doesn't make any sense to change things now. It makes far more sense to give it more time and see, can this work? Can we make this work? And that's, in my opinion, it's the right thing to do, but obviously there's a lot more scrutiny on the decision to do that now in the aftermath of Saturday. And that's fair comment as well.
By the way, that EGM you mentioned, so I saw in your piece in the Irish Independent, you were saying there were on the record quotes about allegations of gerrymandering and that one of the representatives of the players' union described the construction of a new governance structure as shambolic and undemocratic. So the football family is getting on as well as ever, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there were votes in it that were passed by sort of, heavy majorities, it must be said. Again, without getting bogged down into it, this is part, this is obviously a fallout of the Delaney years. And you have effectively a new FAI administration there now at the moment, who the function of the EGM, people talked previously about council and all these FAI the strands of governance as such. And they're introducing a new general assembly, which is actually bigger, but the way in which it's been introduced, has raised questions about, have they done enough work to make sure that all the various strands of the game are represented in the new power structure that's going forward? It's a heavy debate to get into. I'm not sure I want to get into it in great detail now, to pour over it, but to summarize it, yes, it's part of a new power structure, but there's obviously a feeling of Stuart Gilhooly from the players' union went on the record afterwards with regard to the view that there hasn't been enough consultation in his view about how these changes are being brought through. Questions that were being discussed yesterday, will there be too much representation for certain sections of the game relative to others, and where we go? But listen, the broader point is that it's not a happy family by any means. It was obviously a fake happy family before, and now there's there's definitely, it's more an open process that people will air their frustrations at meetings and have a go, but doesn't mean that they're actually happy with the bottom line.
Okay. With the view to Qatar tomorrow, we'll play some of Stephen Kenny's press conference out before we go this evening. Doherty and Egan both injured. That rules out the wing-backs plan.
Stevens.
Sorry, Stevens. Excuse me, Stevens, yeah. So that rules out the wing-back plan, we can safely say. It was interesting. So the Qatar thing is brewing over the last while. Germany followed Norway's suit and staged a protest. The Germans spelled out human rights on their jerseys, one letter per man type thing. And I mean, technically, FIFA's disciplinary code does allow FIFA to take disciplinary action here if you're using a football match for demonstration of a non-sporting nature. So that's kind of a, you know, in the ether, no action taken yet. I mean, The Guardian in particular have done amazing work on this. And we've often spoken to some of their journalists who've done the amazing work over the last couple of years. And last month they made headlines again by just putting forward the fairly shocking headline that since 2010, 6,500 migrant workers have died. Now, not all of this is around just Stadia, but it is part of the overall infrastructure overhaul, which is happening. So it's all World Cup connected, really. It's, I mean, we're talking about the migrant workers as we know at this stage. I think everybody's pretty familiar with this story from India and Pakistan and Bangladesh and Sri Lanka. We're averaging out at 12 per week, which is fairly shocking. Young men in the main. And it's very striking, this World Cup bid, you know, in the context of sports washing and what it aims to do, really Qatar's World Cup bid has only exposed their failure to protect the, I think it's about 2 million strong migrant workforce. What was interesting in the piece in The Guardian last month is that The Guardian pointed out that a huge number of the deaths have been caused by natural causes. So that's what the cause of death is put down as, natural cause, which is suitably vague, often heart or respiratory illness. As high as 69% of the deaths are just natural causes. So you can imagine the families at home are getting a phone call saying, we found your father, husband, brother dead in his room this morning. You know, I read a couple of stories from families that had that experience. So yeah, he's dead. It was natural cause, no autopsy, no information. And here's his €945 in unpaid wages, no compensation required. Thanks for everything. You know, to be brutal about it, that's what's happening. And that's obviously very unsatisfactory. Could you imagine? I mean, a lot of things wrong with what's going, you know, in all countries.
Oh, listen, yeah.
It's horrific. Yeah. Now, in 2019, The Guardian pointed out, UN research did accept that heat was a factor here. And often they're working at nighttime because the conditions are just unimaginable for us. I mean, the heat there is horrific. So they feel that is connected in part to what's going on. But obviously, there's a degree of guesswork here, and it's natural causes and no further investigation. And interestingly, a final point, The Guardian pointed out that in 2014, Qatar's own government experts recommended autopsies. You know, they said, really, this should happen. And it's never happened. And that was 6 years ago. Now, the Qatar government have come out and said, look, these figures are not quite right, that they include white collar workers who've lived in Qatar for many years. And they said only of the 2 million workers, 20% are in construction. And so the death ratio they are arguing is within the expected range. But again, The Guardian dug into this and said there were inconsistencies and a lack of data in their explanation. So we take that in so much as we want to take it, with our however big a pinch of salt we want to take it with. So that's the context. Sorry to rub it on. That's the broad context. And that's the latest in the last month of where this story is. So 10 years, 6,500 migrant workers and appalling conditions. And we've seen the videos and it's just all beyond horrific, really. So Stephen Kenny was asked about this today, Dan, I know, and he wasn't afraid to get stuck into it.
No, he wasn't. I think, you know, listen, it seems almost sort of, hack-like to sort of bring it back to, like, you know, the football debate. I think if things were going better for Stephen Kenny at the moment, I'd imagine he would have embraced it even more, you know, as a discussion point. Yeah. But he, you know, and I think he was almost conscious of, like, you know, being seen to do that to some degree. But he was asked the question. He answered it, you know. Stephen Kenny is someone who, in his programme notes as Dundalk manager, would go into, you know, social issues. So it's not like, you know, it's a new thing or anything. Someone who's very engaged by it, like, you know, sort of get a programme notes about the sort of the housing crisis or the nurses' strike or the Savile inquiry. you know, from his time in Derry in particular, you know, be very much on sort of sensitive to that. And he basically said it was obviously unacceptable. Again, you know, might be playing some of that, but like he said, it was unacceptable. The deaths, he referenced the deaths. It was a lengthy answer. Didn't quite. He said that there was no planned protest, you know, or anything like that. Planned, but that he's a big believer in freedom of speech, so it would have no problem if the players suddenly decided they wanted to do it. But you do have that sense. I think Darryl Shea was asked about it. Was it yesterday or at some point last week? And I think probably you get the sense that people would say, well, the Irish team should take a stand, you know, or do something. And I completely endorse where that's coming from. But I think I almost have this lingering sense that they just feel that they're in some sort of football crisis as it is, and that they're not going to pick the moment to do something like that, if you know what I mean. Because people will probably think that's weak or something like that. But the flip side of that is that people would say, well, you know, go and do your job. You know, yes. Don't get involved in this at the moment. You keep losing. You know, you're not winning a game. You know, why are you getting distracted by this? Look at him. He's going on about this when he should be doing that. So it's a bit of a no-win question,
yeah.
To some degree, I think, to discuss that. But he didn't shirk it. And I would suspect, you know, at a different point in time,
you would engage more.
You'd get a different answer. Yeah.
The quotes I have, I just saw them before we came on air as well. He said, I think there's a clear issue with human rights in the building of stadiums in Qatar, the number of people that have died. You can't sweep that under the carpet. It can't be ignored. Mm. Initially, the Norwegian team and various others have backed that. They're entitled to do it with good reason. It's not acceptable for people to lose their lives. The disparity of wealth between rich and poor, to have people living in conditions of squalor and people dying in those conditions, is not acceptable. That's... Strong, very good, very strong.
The answer, the strong quotes. Now, they are strong quotes. They're on the record. They're there. Just like, you know, I think at another time it would have been a broader discussion, perhaps. But,
sure.
You know, it just wasn't necessarily something that came onto the agenda today, rightly or wrongly.
No, I understand. Gareth Southgate was asked about it as well. And just to give a flavour of what other managers are saying, he said, in terms of the situation in Qatar, the FA are working closely with Amnesty International and will be talking with Qatar as well. My understanding is Amnesty don't want the tournament postponed or moved. They want to work and highlight issues that could be improved. So it's important we work with organisations like that. That's taking a slight step back from Stephen Kenny. I mean, if Southgate had said what Kenny had said, it'd be big news.
That was, you know, that's a I'm going there sort of response, isn't it? You know, as well too. Like it's the call today, like these Zoom conferences are just listen, you know,
boy.
I hate them. But you know, it's just like, but there was all sorts of like, there was BN Sports were in there today, and other, you know, I think there was some, I don't know, were they local Qatari journalists or whatever in there as well and stuff.
Of course,
like that.
Yeah.
So it's where you don't know who you're broadcasting to sometimes in those debates and discussions, and like, you know, you can understand how Southgate, listen. We all want everyone to be principled and saying the right thing. You know, I think it's important that people use their voice, but the reticence probably comes from somewhere. You know, Southgate's probably thinking of it's a long way to this tournament. I have to go there. And, you know, the English manager speaking can take things off in a different direction. And you'd like to think it wouldn't be that way. Like, you really admire the stand taken by the Norwegians and by the Germans. But like, the thing about the Qatari thing is obviously, you know, they got the tournament because of a dreadful voting process involving FIFA that every football association in some shape or form can accept some kind of responsibility for it, because they've all played the game to some degree, you know, in some shape or form. And that, like, when the tournament was awarded was really the time when football associations and probably football people could have taken a very strong stand against it, stop it. But they don't do that because a form of like real politic that exists. And then the focus is shifted on to players and managers to speak about it. And it's important that they use their platform to do it. But like the opportunity was missed by a lot of the people who pay the wages to these people, you know, and that's just something that should be pointed out.
Very finally and brief as you like, to be honest. So Qatar, just having a look here, their rankings, they were down kind of around the 100 marker until about 2017. And since then, they've had 3-4 years of scooting up there, 55th to 58th over the last 3 years. So they're currently 58th in the world. So yeah. by Luxembourg standards, Dan, we're in for a tough night there. What are we expecting?
Well, they're top of the group if they've been allowed to play in the group. You know, like they're in the group schedules. They'd have 6 points in the bag from beating Azerbaijan and beating Luxembourg, you know. They're clearly not bad. All their players are based in Qatar. They've got naturalized players in there, you know, living in better conditions than most people who get taken into the country.
Yeah.
And so they have a couple of Sudanese players, French lad, a Portuguese-born player, and a couple of others. They have a Spanish manager. But they're effectively in a World Cup preparation camp, you know, and their result, they've been to Copa America 2 years ago. Mm. They got 1 point in their group, but they weren't embarrassed. And they've sort of got steadily better. Their results against European sides and friendlies, beat Switzerland a couple of years ago, drew with Iceland. Then in the last week there, they had those wins. So I think they're basically a bit of a nightmare opponent in some ways for Ireland, yeah. I think. Because they know exactly what they are. Like they played, most of them play for the same club or for three clubs. So they will have a firm identity and an understanding and an awareness of each other and what they are. And clearly Ireland are really struggling with that thing at the moment. So this is actually a pretty tough game. And listen, there'll be no sympathy if Ireland lose to Qatar. You know, like that's a headline. Qatar, you know, the general public will look at that and be unforgiving, and then you have more issues. So I mean, you know, this is not like there are friendlies that are, you know, a nice way to get back on the horse, but I don't think this is one of those ones. No.
Okay. Good. The good news keeps.
There's no uplifting. Yeah, there's no uplifting. But Ireland are playing Andorra in the summer, Joe. So okay. All going to plan. If there's no wins after 11, there should hopefully be 1 and 12.
W. Tick. Dan McDonald of the Irish Independent, thank you.
Thanks.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network.